Hi, Stockwell. Wendy Wells.
I'm sorry, who's this?
Wendy Wells.
Oh, hello, thank you.
You're welcome. And who am I talking to?
This is Gail.
Oh, okay.
So we haven't started the meeting yet. We're just
we're
waiting on one more person, and then we'll call roll. And we have a couple of cases ahead of you.
He can join us when he has a moment. It's 12:35 here at the Naturopathic Medical Board meeting, and we're going to start off with, I am from the Assistant Attorney General, Ms. Hostas here, and then Ms. Anthony, our Executive Director. And for formality, Gail, could you do roll call for us?
I will, thank you. Dr. Sadlick?
Here.
Dr. Popio? Dr. Popio? I thought he was with us. Dr. Popio? Ms. Tibbetts?
Here.
Ms. Gallen?
Here.
Dr. Campbell?
Here.
Dr. Spatt?
Here.
Dr. Rubin?
Present.
Dr. Popio, are you with us? Okay. It appears Dr. Popio is absent.
Okay, so we're missing Dr. Popio, and Dr. Rubin has joined.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's move on to we didn't get any notes from any board members with conflict of interest. So we'll move on to number three, civility statement. I'll read this briefly. In accordance with the open meeting law, the board has a civility policy that prohibits any type of disorderly conduct that disrupts the board from carrying out its business. Those that violate the policy, I'm going to ask you once to modify your behavior. If you don't, we're going to have you disconnect from the following. Move on to the consent agenda. What I'd like to do is number four. I'd like to roll number 4A all the way through. Everyone's in agreement. 4A, we're going to roll it all the way to 4N. So I'll need a motion. I'll make the first.
Second, Bill. Karen
Simmons. Okay.
Let me do roll call, please.
Yeah, you want to do
Dr. Sadlick.
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, so we're going to go with number five, review consideration of possible action regarding the following board cases. Dr. Morris, you have Mr. Cohen, he's legal counsel with you today?
Yeah.
Okay. And we'll go ahead and go into case number 20-144, and Dr. Carmen Mora. And you know, whenever it's convenient, if you could just give us an overview.
Sure. Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, in December of 2019, during her renewal of medical license, respondent self-reported she was at the time a defendant in a malpractice case. On March 4th, 2020, the board received notice from CAS Specialty of a settlement payment made regarding CV 2019-003377 in the amount of $225,000. According to the National Practitioner Data Bank reporting, the claim is based on respondents' failure to identify post-procedural symptoms that indicated kidney failure, for which the patient required subsequent hospitalization. A notice of board complaint and subpoena for patient medical records was sent to respondent on April 24, 2020. On May 26, 2020, the board received a response regarding the case from respondent's attorney, Mr. David Cohen. The records for patient PP have been provided for board review.
Dr. Mora or Mr. Cohen, comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. This is David Cohen. I am going to defer my comments to Dr. Mora at this time.
Mr. Chairman and members of the board, thank you for the opportunity to discuss this case with you. I have performed many cycle aspirations of fat transfers with zero complications or complaints except for this case. I have taken 8 intensive courses in lipoaspiration of fat grafting, which involves one-on-one hands-on performance of these procedures with live models and cadavers. I was qualified and competent to perform these minor procedures when I saw this patient. In retrospect, my documentation in this case could have been better. I used handwritten charting at the time, and although I did my best, I did not write everything down. There are things that I recall about this patient in this case that I did not document. I have since switched from paper charts to that CMR system and to ensure complete charting. As set forth in the chart and based on my recollection, when this patient first came to me, she wanted a lipoaspiration with fat transfer. She stated she suffered from white coat syndrome, and I discussed doing a trial lipoaspiration first to make sure there were no issues before doing the fat transfer. We went over and she signed a fat transfer consent form, which includes consent for the lipoaspiration. Thus, there was no need for a separate lipoaspiration consent form. I ordered labs and urine analysis for the patient and discussed the results with her. She informed me she was not fasting at the time the labs were drawn. I neglected to document the lab and urine analysis review in my charting, primarily because the results did not impact the patient's candidacy for the minor procedure being performed. I performed the first lipoaspiration procedure with no complications. I then attempted alternatives to the second lipoaspiration of fat transfer, such as diet and weight loss medication, but the patient still insisted that she wanted another lipoaspiration with fat transfer. I advised her that she should get another lab drawn urine analysis, but she refused because she did not have insurance. CAS labs and urine analysis done within the last 6 months, and there was no issue related to the first lipoaspiration procedure. Such refusals are not uncommon with my patient population, who I often treat for free or at a discount because of their lack of insurance. I then wrote preoperative prescriptions for the patient. The copies of the prescription that were provided to the board are copies of the bottom carbon copies of the prescription, and thus all information is not visible on what was provided to you. The completed original is what is given to the patient to fill the prescriptions at the pharmacy. The original prescriptions were filled out completely with all the required information, and we would be happy to make my original chart available to the board because it is easier to see the writing in the original chart. I no longer use paper prescriptions and have since switched to ERX for all my prescriptions. During the second procedure, the patient's blood pressure rose and I informed her I was finished the lipoaspiration and not through the fat transfer as requested. Blood pressure medication was provided and the patient's blood pressure normalized. The patient informed me she felt fine before being discharged and I instructed her to go to the ER if she had any adverse reactions. During the following days, I continued to instruct her to go to the ER, but she refused because she did not have health insurance. So my instructions to the ER is documented in this chart or in my text to the patient. Some are not. Because she would not go to the ER, I managed her condition in my office and even at her home for 8 days before she finally went. Even though neither I nor the expert witnesses we retained believe I did anything wrong, I've changed my practice since these events occurred and have stopped performing lipo aspiration procedures. I prefer to simply concentrate on other aspects of my practice now. The decision to settle a lawsuit was an economic decision made by my insurance carrier. I do not have consent clause. The settlement documents specifically state that I did not do anything wrong. As a naturopathic physician, I always try to improve and I'm always trying to learn. I learned from this case and have implemented changes as a result. I'm looking forward to your questions, feedback, and recommendations for other ways that I can learn and improve. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a couple questions and then I'm going to send it to all the board members for their opinion. I'll start with my question. Basically, since this was sort of a what we would call medical procedure, do you do any pre-procedural screening on these patients? So, for example, do you draw this basic lab, do your physical assessment, and then proceed with the procedure? Or how do you normally do this if someone was to present to your office?
I don't draw the labs at my office. I give them a lab order. And then next to this, we have them come back in 3 weeks to review the lab. If you look at the super bill from the first visit, it states right there, return to clinic in 3 weeks for lab review. On the first visit, we just do many more of an initial consult. It's when she comes in. For the procedure that I have some checklist forms, you can see them in the chart where I'm kind of going through to review systems again with them.
Okay. When I look at her lab, the WBC, the white blood cell count?
Yes.
Was this pre or post procedural?
This is pre, and we had talked about it. She had told me when she did the lab, she had did it for the end of the day, but she was not fasting. She had told me she was getting over UTI. And when we're reviewing the lab, she told me she no longer had the UTI. It was just for a couple of days.
Okay. And then it looks like you did a culture sensitivity on the urine analysis? Go ahead.
Well, when she came into the office, I just did a pregnancy test with the urine.
Okay. And then you did also do the HEPA-BC screening test?
Yeah.
Okay. So looking at this case, how do you see this as becoming a problem with her in terms of her renal complications? Do you believe that she had renal complications prior to the case, and perhaps it was problematic before you did the procedure, or do you think she got renal complications post-procedural?
In retrospect, from this whole case and with the pathologist documentation, it appeared that she had issues before.
Okay. And would you have seen her now, obviously in retrospect, but would you have done this procedure on her currently?
No. I've completely changed my practice since then.
Okay.
I now require every patient I'm seeing, labs have to be within 30 days.
30 days before you do the procedure.
Well, I'm not doing lipo aspiration. That year, I stopped doing lipo aspiration.
Okay.
Just with all this, it was a little bit traumatic for me going through all this. I'm just saying even now, just for anything, they want to come in and get an IV, they want to come in and get a vitamin, or, you know, they want to consult. I'm asking, a lot of people would be like, oh, I have labs from my previous doctor that were, you know, 3 months old. Now it's like, I'm strict with them. It has to be within 30 days to lapse. And I'm looking at everything. If they're telling me, for example, like with this case that I took a oral, she just had an ETI recently. No, I'm kind of getting still be more into it now.
Okay, and then your HCG that you're currently doing, you're obviously checking them for, you're doing a pregnancy test before you give them an HCG?
Yes, I have pregnancy tests in my office.
Okay, so you're doing just in the office. And are you doing mostly at this current point weight loss then?
Well, I'm working more with PRP, there's a lot of PRP and biological allograft and medical ozone.
Okay, so are you doing any, before you do PRP, I take it you're probably doing, you know, I'll make sure I understand you right, you're probably doing some type of just a BMP or a quick assessment of the patient before you?
Maybe the CBD PRP.
Okay. And you'll do that prior to doing like a PRP injection?
Depending on the procedure, if they're coming in, for example, for knee pain, I'm getting imaging too first. So I'm kind of wanting to see the x-ray, what exactly is going on.
And are you doing the PRP by palpation or are you doing with ultrasound?
Palpation.
Okay. I'm going to move it to the other board members. Let's go ahead and start off with Dr. Spatt.
I don't have any questions at the moment. I'm still waiting. Thank you.
I'm going to move it to Dr. Rubin.
Sorry about that. I couldn't find the mute button. This is Dr. Rubin. Yeah, I'm going to have Dr. Mora.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure this has been traumatic. I don't know, but I can only imagine from what I've talked to, other physicians. I have a few curiosities here, so I may take a little few minutes if that's okay, Dr. Satterlein. Dr. Mora, I'm guessing that prepared statement was written and that you read it to us.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious. What happened here? Like, you, there's these texts, you seem to treat your patients very well, very caring, but I've read through this case several times. There's a lot of pages here, and this person was in acute renal failure, and it seemed to happen right after this procedure. Now, I live in the world of oncology. I don't live in the world of much physical medicine or aesthetics. I'm a biochemical guy. You did labs, looks like, just under 3 weeks before the time of surgery, and looked like the BUN and the creatinine in particular were just fine, electrolytes were fine. What do you think happened here? You know, in your words, not necessarily in a prepared statement.
Yeah. Going through this case, and when we have experts come in and pathologists, for example, there was Dr. Cynthia Carolyn, Matthew, pathologist, and she reviewed this. She found that the patient had pre-existing, and I can pull up exactly.
Sclerosing glomerular nephritis, I believe, that it looks like it may have been pre-existing.
Yeah. So she said even about that. She thought the acute renal failure was related to her pre-existing condition.
Right.
Not,
but I didn't. And so does she think that it was just poor timing? That all of a sudden she went into acute renal failure. It just so happened that you had given her liposuction a couple days before. I don't know if this could be a complication of the liposuction. This is not a court of law, obviously, but it's a, you know, board of your peers. I'm trying to understand medically what happened here. And so I'm asking you as a physician, because you've been through it.
I apologize, but I'm not an apologist or pathologist, so I would just refer to what the experts were stating.
Okay. Is a renal failure a complication or a potential complication of the procedure, any of the procedures you performed that day? I mean,
no.
December?
No.
Got it. Okay. I have a couple of things. The thread in your responses when she was beginning her symptomatology really was related to toxins. That seemed to be what you were hanging on, that this is normal, vomiting, diarrhea, extreme fatigue, headache, hypertension, that these are all related to toxin, some type of toxin issue. Could you go over that in your thread of thought for us?
Well, when I'm doing lipoaspiration, I'm aspirating the adipose, the fat. So typically toxins are stored in the fat. You know, I pulled out a lot of fat from her. There was a lot of movement. You know, like the symptoms she had, to me those appeared as like toxin release symptoms. You know, the nauseousness, the loose stools, the vomiting right after. To me, that was like, oh, you know, we moved a lot of fat around. You know, which I did move a lot of fat. You know, when I would see her so frequently, you know, I had told her, you know, that same day I did the procedure, I had told her, go to the ER if symptoms get worse. You know, your blood pressure did go up, you know, the whole time. She's like, I'm fine. She's very insistent that she still wanted me to do the fat transfer. And I was like, no, I'm not. You know, we're just going to remove the fat. I'm not going to keep doing the procedure and prolong it. And I told her to the ER. You know, in the next day, you know, I did an IV on her and I told her to go to the ER again. And for her, she's like, oh, I'm just tired. You know, the kind of the symptoms that were talking to me, it appeared like it did not appear at all like it was acute renal failure. I would ask her about her urination. I would ask her, you know, respiratory symptoms, all these other stuff. And she was just like, oh, I'm just tired. You know, it was more like GI problems. You know, like I had loose stools. I feel nauseous. To me, what was going in my mind is like, oh, you know, we moved around so much fat, like she's releasing toxins. She was not the, you know, she had your typical Latino diet where it was like tacos and enchiladas. It wasn't, I just felt like we were releasing toxins when I did the lipoaspiration.
So you moved around fat or you removed fat? I thought you didn't do a fat transfer.
I did not do a fat transfer, but when I'm removing the fat, with the cannula, you're kind of moving the fat, because that's how you break it up, to aspirate it.
So this is these are common symptoms after this type of procedure?
Some of them, yes. I've seen it in my training where patients have been nauseous. That's why we do IVs after. I've seen them throw up after the procedure. So they were common symptoms I've seen from my training.
And then it's common for them to have progressive toxin-related. My thoughts would be, just from an environmental perspective, and I do environmental and toxicity testing, and I'm very keen to, the late Walter Cranium was part of our practice, who, for those of you on the call, that was one of the fathers of environmental medicine, so aware of symptomatology, and you're talking about lipophilic or certain toxins that would be, it's part of a normal lifestyle. Is that something that you then would test for, or you would expect, or you would want to give them cleaning agents or sort of detoxification agents? And would you expect then there to be continued breakdown of fat and therefore continued release of the toxins, therefore worsening and perpetuating her symptoms? For me, I'm having a difficult time understanding. I get the thought and the theory of the toxins, but the progressive symptoms, the time it took, and the vomiting and the extreme fatigue doesn't fit for me. So that's why I'm questioning you about your line of thought and how you were going about it.
Well,
so I guess I just need more on just moving around fast and breaking down.
It all sounds tired. This all transpired within a week.
Gotcha.
When you start having the symptoms, to me, there's That's right. I assume there are detox symptoms. She had headaches, fatigue, nausea, loose stool. But every day I was talking to her, it was like, I'm getting better. I'm feeling better. I'm just tired. I'm fatigued. You know, she would say, like, oh, yeah, you know, like, I'm trying to eat all these tacos and I'm trying to my saladas and I fill it up. You know, I'm thinking, well, you're not, you know, chronic, you're doing a fast and you just can't eat anything. You have to slowly introduce gluten then. That was going on through my mind process that week. We're talking about this within a week. I still kept telling her, if you're not feeling better, you need to go to the ER. I repeatedly told her this.
I understand. So that. I did
my assumption, yeah, was her.
Why did you want her to go to the ER? It seems like you said that kind of right away. And I'm curious what your line of thinking was, is why you, I don't know if you were assessing her, if you were doing any lab tests yourself, that's another question of mine. And then you just kept saying, go to the ER. What were you thinking of why you wanted her to go to the ER?
Her blood pressure had gone up. It wasn't like a very typical procedure, so I wanted to make sure that, okay, if something else is going on, you need to go to the ER. And so the next day, you know, she threw up. So I'm like, okay, you know, I think patients throw up from like last version procedures. But I know, like, if you're not getting better, you need to go to the ER. I was not her primary care physician. We treated her on a daily basis.
But you were corresponding with her, you were the treatment of record, and you were acting in that context. I understand that you were trying to help your patient, you were being nice, and you were very communicative. I just think that what I know, being in practice, and perhaps some of the other doctors, I don't know if Dr. Papil joined the call, but I know he's familiar with aesthetics practices. This, to me, didn't seem like a typical course of detoxification. We've taken people through, you know, purposeful and intentional detoxes where you are releasing, and the progressive and extreme fatigue that came through in the text conversation, to me, I agree with you that maybe, you know, visit to the ER would be fine, but I'm curious, one, for me, it didn't connect for me that these could be just toxins. I get the theory, I understand that. But the body should be efficiently able to release those, especially it shouldn't be progressive. Number two, I didn't see, and perhaps I was in this and missed it, of you, while you had a needle in her arm, giving her IVs, why you didn't draw some blood, draw CMP, just to look at what could be happening, especially if you're removing toxins, you might see some elevation in LFTs, you might see some elevation in renal function, you might see electrolyte abnormalities, plus, you know, it might have been you had a pre-existing WBC, which I encourage you to follow up on any abnormality with WBC like that, even if it's, you know, leukopenia versus leukocytosis. But so I'm curious why you didn't draw a lab. That could have stopped this thing more quickly.
I didn't think of it at that time.
Got it. Thank you, Dr. Sadler.
Can I ask a clarifying question? This is Karen Sadler.
Yes.
Doctor, during that week post procedure, was there a point at which you shifted from thinking it was just detoxing to thinking it was something more serious? At what point did you think that, or did that come to your mind?
When it was lasting, typically to me, I was like, okay, 3 days, 5 days, you know, you feel it's even detoxing. But then we're getting to 6 days, that's when I was like, you know, you need to go get this checked out, like, you need to go to the hospital, you know. I was being very adamant with that, and she was just like, oh, no, I'm just tired, you know, I've been, like, lazy, I'm just tired of just laying around. You know, so it was that kind of feedback, but I was asking her, like,
were you seeing her in the office during that time? I think there was it daily or was it mostly through text?
She was coming in kind of, I can look at the exact date, but it was not daily, a lot of it was through text.
But it was more than one or two times during that week that you did see her in person?
Yeah.
And when you realized that it probably wasn't just detox, what did you think it could be?
Well, after she was urinating, And she was like, there's no problem with my urine. I was asking her, like just going from head to bottom, like neurological questions, palpitations. At that point, I didn't really know. I had even went to her house because I was like, okay, you know, and I had talked with her family. Her family was there, you know. I hung out a couple hours talking with the family, and I told them, I was like, this is, you know, I really think she needs to go to the hospital. Like, this is, like, way beyond my scope.
Okay, thank you.
Let me move to Dr. Campbell. He's still online.
Yes, I am. Actually, my questions have already been addressed. Thank you. I don't have any questions at this time.
I just want to know, when you talk with the patient, do you even, let's say, on the phone, do you document any of those feedback to you and you respond to the patient as well?
Now I do. Now I'm using EMR, and I even do every phone log, email, text, any kind of correspondence is uploaded to the chart as well.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Galvin, comments?
I'm just listening right now and thinking.
Okay.
Dr. Tadler, this is Dr. Barnacle Phil. I am home now.
Oh, hi,
Dr. Phil. Yeah. Hi there, I apologize. Dr. Moore, I did have a couple questions for you. I was very much on the line with Dr. Rubin's line of questioning. I think that for me, if you're thinking on the toxin side of things, that was one of the questions I had to probably think about, in my mind, 48 hours max on those symptoms as far as the detoxing process. And my thought exactly on grabbing some CDC compounds, because things are not progressing. I did have a question about the thought process on adding the amniotic liquid allograft. What was the goal with that?
I was just going through all my resources. I work a lot with biological allografts, and then we bring up your immune system, just good for your whole body overall, like, you know, sterile, regenerative. I didn't know what else to give her, and I just wanted to help her.
Okay. Are you using that a lot in general practice?
Yeah.
Okay. I appreciate your wanting to help this patient, and certainly you're following up and good communication. I wish that you've drawn a lab prior to doing all the interventions that you did, that would have been probably the first line of therapy to just check some basic things out. Whether it be infection, whether it be liver, kidney, those would be some of the things I would think about first rather than more therapies.
You're correct. I agree.
My concern, obviously, I think you probably have, unfortunately, I've been through this with numerous times, but I'll digress back to what Dr. Rubin was talking about, was the ability, whether you're doing this procedure or not anymore, is the ability to see that you've got a problem, whether it be nephrology, whether it be cardiovascular, neurological, gastroenterology, that you would be able to quickly assess and turf through a major metabolic problem. That's where that's where I'm going to rest my concern, is that you'd be able to diagnose and be able to move forward. Okay, you can hydrate them, which would probably help with the IV, but prior to hydration, get some baseline labs, then get those processed. If you need to hydrate, then do they have CHF? Do they have any other problems? Then go ahead and proceed with treatment. But the meat of the problem is just diagnosis. That's where where I'm at this current point, and obviously it was probably brought up when he had the complaint that I brought against you.
Now, in retrospect, I should have done laps right away. And in my mind at that time, I was just thinking, you know, detox. And another thing is, how, let's say I have a situation with a patient where, you know, I feel something's not right and I want them to go to a specialist or to an ER and they don't. Like, what would you guys recommend? How can I go about this? How can I? I mean, I thought I was very adamant with this patient from the beginning. You know, you need to go to a specialist. It's like way beyond me. Have other physicians gone through something like this? And what is it you guys would recommend and how I can? Because I would feel horrible. I tell them, you know, I'm not going to see you at all, that they can't afford to go to the ER. And I would feel worse that I just kept trying to help them and because they didn't have insurance or money. You know, I left them out in the cold.
No, I understand your conundrum on it, and I mean, all you could do is simply suggest it, document it. If they can afford, I mean, there's access programs, there's a whole bunch of different, you know, means for them to do it. But if you document it, that you told them to go to Banner or wherever you chose, and they don't go, then there's not much else you could do than what you've done. I understand your conundrum of where you were with this.
So, I see a lot of Latino population and a lot of students do not have papers where they can get access or they're even afraid to go. What would you like to recommend though? Like, let's say I have a situation where I know they need to be a specialist. Should I continue trying to help them or just be like, I can't see you at all? Like, I think we can't advise you,
but I'm thinking just for your future is simply just to say, I mean, whether they're documented, undocumented, however it goes, is you have to then protect yourself. If they refuse to go, they refuse to go. And I understand, again, that conundrum that you're in treating that population. But I mean, my concern is just make that critical diagnostic decision of what's going on with the patient. And that's all I have. Go ahead, someone else needs to speak for
me. Oh, thank you, Dr. Sedgwick. This is Dr. Dan Rubin. I absolutely agree with you. And I think what I heard you say too is if somebody needs to go to the emergency department, you don't give them a choice. You say, you must go now. That's what I've done in the past. And anyhow, the concern I think that's been reflected in a lot of us is about the medical issue. And it's not atypical for naturopathic physicians who come before this board and others in practice who haven't come before our board to want to play only a small part. And that, for instance, Dr. Moore, some of the comments you made, that you were there, you were doing the procedure, you're not her primary care physician, doesn't matter, you're a doctor. And there's a situation that occurred, I don't know if it was incredibly coincidentally, but you're thinking toxins, which means were you prepared for the medical implications that could come after procedure or in seeing patients? And so I'm cautioning you, don't be in that trap where you're like, I'm only going to do a little part of this, the rest of it you have to go somewhere else. That's one of the things that I have a big problem with some of our licensees. That they won't, and they refuse to play, and they push them to other people who then take responsibility. Part of having the license is to be able to handle certain things and recognizing acute care settings. I just want to give you that piece of advice.
That's an excellent point. Go ahead, Dr.
Creel. No, I was just going to say, to add right on to what Dr. Rubin said, is, you know, another thing that comes on the board is people saying there's complicated labs, et cetera. You know, you need to have the cash pay lab that you can set up with these different companies for $4 for CBC, 10 for the CAN panel. I want you to also have that right there in your practice where if you have the ability to start an IV, there's no problem drawing the blood, you run there, you know, have the lab come to your office, pick it up, take care of it, same thing with, you know, cachet rather than cycle, cachet imaging assignment or things like that. You have the capacity to have, to run a triage pretty much for most of the things that could come up in your package, whether or not that person has insurance. You should, you definitely have the capacity to be able to run the lab, run the imaging at a very reasonable price when you set those relationships up with a lot of the places that are around.
I will do that.
Because I totally appreciate the situation that, you know, your patients are lacking in money. And did you comp most of the treatment afterwards, the IVs and stuff?
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, it would have behooved you to have a $15 worth of CDC and chem panel set up so you could say, yeah, I'd run it on the house. I'd rather you comp that than, you know, more treatment. I'm not, we probably beat you up about this, but definitely set those relationships up. There's definitely no reason you wouldn't be able to have very, very reasonably priced labs run for patients where even if you ever get in a position like this again, putting them on the house and you covering them is no issue, and then you're covered for liability purposes.
No, I will be reaching out to lab companies to set up in-house labs in my office now.
My suggestion, and then I'm going to move it to proposal, is that you, if you're going to do a procedure or you're going to take that patient in the door, that you have now, whether you believe you're their primary care, whether you don't, you have assumed their care for that particular situation and for those particular circumstances. So you have, in many ways, now you have attached yourself as a primary care physician. And you can always refer them back to primary care, but you have to treat them for what you diagnose and see when they're in the office. I agree 100%. It's very common in this profession to say, you know, I'm only going to give you do this or that, and then you go back to your other, you know, clinician. Yeah, and that can work fine as long as you have that all documented, as long as you have a game plan that they will return. You've got to, I mean, the critical diagnostics is the part that you know, does concern me, but yeah, I think we're kind of going back over the same routine. So I'm going to ask board members to summarize any opinions on how they'd like to move forward with. I guess I'll start with Dr. Rubin, and then I'll move to Dr. Spatt, Dr. Popiel.
This is Dr. Rubin. I'm here. I'm just thinking for a second, if you don't mind. I'm happy to keep it on me if you want.
No, let's go ahead and move to Dr. Popiel then.
I feel like there are some concerns for sure, but this is probably one of the more painful learning opportunities in having to go through malpractice and everything. So I feel like there's probably a lot of changes that have already occurred here and documented that. In my opinion, this is a situation where it's an unfortunate set of events. She's learned a lot, and I don't think we would be at risk for having her in front of the board again, or that patients are at risk for being under her care. So to me, this would be a case where we dismiss.
Your comments.
Is that a motion, Dr. Popiel?
No, I would not yet. I can stop and establish with anyone to give everybody opportunity to speak.
I agree with what Dr. Popiel stated. I don't believe there's concern for future or that anybody is at risk.
Ms. Gallon?
I think I agree as well.
Dr. Campbell, where are you at with this?
I concur.
Dr. Spatt, what are your thoughts?
Yes, I think we have one in the central of the hill is the kind of, I think people agree with the talk to you as well on his speaking flow. Dr. Rubin, your thoughts?
I concur with what Dr. Papil said well.
Yeah, I have to, you know, concur with that. I just would like to say with emphasis, please always look for those finite diagnostic things that we often miss and just run through all that in your mind, the pathophys, so that this, you know, doesn't transpire, hopefully, you know, again. But I'll make a motion, and then I think everyone else is somewhat within that area, that we move to dismiss this board case.
I second that motion. This is Dan Rubin.
And I'll have to ask Ms. Anthony to do a roll call.
Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Dr. Mora. Thank you, Dr. Thomas.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good day.
Thank you. Okay, let's go ahead and proceed on to case number 20-151, and that's Dr. Wendy Wells. And is Dr. Wells on the line? I believe she is.
Yes, I am.
Okay. Ms. Anthony, can you give an overview on it?
Yeah, I just wanted to confirm. Mr. McClub, are you on the line as well? Mr. McClung, are you on the line? Dr. Sadlick. Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, this complaint is case number 20-151. And on May 14th, 2020, the State of Arizona Naturopathic Physicians Medical Board received a complaint from Dennis McClung, alleging respondent allowed her medical assistant, Daniel McClung, to prescribe drugs without establishing a doctor-patient relationship. Dennis McClung is the ex-husband of Daniel McClung. Daniel McClung was formerly employed as a medical assistant by respondent. Respondent has never seen Dennis McClung as a patient. While employed by respondent, Daniel McClung phoned in two prescriptions for Dennis McClung, one for citrulline and one for Lasix. Respondent had no knowledge of these prescriptions. Once respondent was notified about the prescriptions, she did confront Daniel, who ultimately resigned from her job.
And Dr. Wells, your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't have any comments. If you have any specific questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay, I just have a couple quick questions. Is it, before I begin, is the complainant on the phone, or did we lose him? I guess he disconnected. When you hire people, MAs, DMAs, et cetera, you have probably a protocol, I would imagine, in place for prescription refills, et cetera?
Yes, we do. Typically, they message me. The patient calls with a request. They message me if there's a fax from the pharmacy. They message me and the practice usually. And then I'll get back to them as whether or not you can refill. Typically, with thyroid and hormone patients, for 6 months or 3 months, if there's been a change in dosage, I require that prior to refills. We're trying to do the best we can with that. You know, there's some wiggle room here and there, but we try and keep on a 6 month schedule or 3 months if changes were made in the dosage.
Okay. But all the prescriptions prior to refills are being run by you then for
Absolutely.
Okay. Let me put it back to the board members for additional questions to Dr. Wells. Dr. Popiel, questions for Dr. Wells?
No, I don't really have any questions, but it's a tough situation because obviously as a physician you can't take care of every single prescription on your own, so you have to put trust in those people that you're employing to do the right thing and never abuse that trust. So, you know, I don't really know, other than obviously continuing to strive for hiring the right people, you know, how you would avoid a potential situation where a medical assistant didn't go outside of the realm of what they should be doing. So not really a question, just more of a statement of, you know, it certainly could happen in my practice. I don't, you know, because my medical system is taking care of a lot. So I don't really know what sort of safeguards you could put in place to prevent this from ever happening, other than just trying to be very clear with your medical system that it can never happen.
Ms. Tibbetts?
I don't have any questions.
Ms. Gallen?
I don't have any questions.
Dr. Rubin?
No, I thought board staff Gail commented very nicely, put this together. I thought your question was great. I don't have any questions. Dr. Wells is a well-known practitioner, very responsible. If patients had seen her, this does not seem of any fault with Dr. Wells, and I would be happy to make a motion. Need be.
Dr. Spatt? Let me call this. Okay. Dr. Rubin, you want to make a motion?
Yes. I move that we dismiss this complaint.
I second that. Karen said it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second, so I have some stamps in your roll call.
Okay. Dr. Sadluck?
Aye.
Dr. Popiel?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Dr. Wells.
Thank you all.
We'll move on to case number 20-154. And that's Ms. Lovelight. I believe Ms. Anthony has a comment on that.
Yes, Dr. Sadluck, members of the board, I've been notified that Ms. Lovelight will not be present today, but I will go ahead and do a brief overview. This complaint came to the board by way of information provided by a licensed naturopathic physician of probable use of protected title by Patricia Lovelight. Patricia Lovelight is not a licensed naturopathic physician in the state of Arizona. As part of the investigation, an internet search did disclose 6 instances where Ms. Lovelight did use the protected title. I have reviewed the internet, and she has complied with most of the sites by taking and removing the protected title. However, at last look, there are still 1 or 2 sites where it does still look like she's using the protected title.
I mean, I see a couple of ways to do this, and I'm going to ask the board members for their advice and suggestions. One of them could be, I could simply give her 30, 45 days to expunge all the, she'll probably have to hire somebody to remove all the naturopathic from the internet if she can get it done, or since she's not available, we could ask her when she is available and have her at the next board meeting. So I'm going to open it up for board members to give me their suggestions on it. So we'll start off with, go ahead, we'll start with Dr. Popiel.
Yeah, that's going to be reasonable, but I think there's been a couple other cases in the past where people are struggling to get the internet, quote unquote, to remove data that's out there. So if she's already complied with the vast majority of it, taking down those credentials, then maybe give her another 30 days to finalize that.
Okay. Ms. Tibbetts?
I don't have any comments beyond what Dr. Popiel just said.
Okay. Ms. Gallen?
I agree.
Dr. Campbell?
Thank you. I totally agree. Gail, just one quick question. Has Patricia Lovelight been compliant with you and responsive up until her inability to attend the meeting today?
Yes, she has very much been responsive, and she understands the seriousness of the situation. She claims she was not aware when she moved from, I believe it was Oklahoma, here, that she needed to be licensed in order to use the designation of naturopath and others. There is, like I said, still a few things that need to be scrubbed on the internet as whole, but she has been very compliant with removing what she personally can remove from this point.
Okay, thank you. Nothing else from
that. And let me move on to Dr. Rubin.
Well, I agree. I think sometimes it would be good, and I think it would be great to have her in person present at the meeting when we discuss her case again. I think 60 days is reasonable.
And Dr. Spratt?
I agree with what had been said so far. So, 30 days, I think, is appropriate enough.
Okay. So, I'll make a motion then. We give her 30 days to expunge however much she can, because it may be very diffuse out there from the internet. And then Ms. Anthony can go back in and see how much. What type of progression she's had with expunging that title of naturopathic. And go ahead, I'll need a second, and then we'll need a roll call.
Can we ask for an application or their discussion?
Yes.
Sorry, I just had a comment. We are 30 days. I just wanted, before we move to an official, second.
Is it the Ruben? I
can't hear myself. I need your phone.
Dr. Ruben, you're breaking up. Are you on a speaker or headset?
No, I'm just kind of sitting here.
Okay. No, you're fine. It must have been Dr. Campbell talking.
Okay. I thought about that one.
This is Dr. Rubin. I was just curious in terms of the 30 days, but that's fine, in terms of removing what she can. This is a really big issue for me, as it is for whoever derives the complaint and for members of the board. And I just would be curious, asking Gail, what's our sort of depth of penetration to be able to search the internet to make sure things are corrupt? Do we have any particular tools or companies that we use to kind of make sure that this, or is it just us?
Dr. Southwick, members of the board, and so I usually just do a Google search with the names. I do, some like the names, and I put doctor in, I put naturopath in, but I I just look at what comes up, and then when it comes up, I look at the site itself. So that's how I originally found the six And then I went back after speaking with the respondent, and you know, she said, well, she cleaned it up. And I went back and I did continue to find it. There were two that were still viewable when you just do a Google search on her. So that's how I kind of track this.
Okay.
I'm sorry. And so, you know, there is, as we've done before, there are, you know, people out there that can do a complete internet scrub. And that should hopefully, if she does that, take care of whatever is residual on the internet.
Well, I would like to add to the motion, if possible, this is Dr. Lupin, that Ms. Atwood or Lovelight submit to us a certification or just documentation of what has been done, who has done it, just so we can assess if it's satisfactory for the board.
So would you want this case to be brought back to the board? Because that sort of makes more sense to do like an overview in 30 days of what's taking place.
I apologize. I thought that that was part of the motion. I apologize if it wasn't, and I may need to be restated.
Go ahead, Dr. Rubin. I'm
reading
what you'd like.
I apologize if I misunderstood you after that one. In the motion that Ms. Atwood, Ms. Lovelight's effort to clear through the over the internet any reference to her as an intrapath or intrapathic physician or ND or NMD, and within 30 days and submit documentation for board to review.
So you'd like her to put in writing back to the board that she has done probably, I guess at this phase, the best of her ability, or she'll have to hire somebody, to expunge all that phrasing that she's used, but have her put it in her handwriting?
Or submit documentation that I'm doing. My recommendation is to protect her, just so we can see what has been done, so we can try to close this matter.
Okay. Can you phrase it formally for us then?
This is Ian Rubin. I move. Wait, do we have an open motion? I'm not sure how to proceed.
The motion's open. We're just coming up with the verbiage for the motion.
Can I submit this verbiage that by 30 days, that Ms. Lovelight submit in her writing or documentation via company that she's hired or however she sees fit, her efforts to expunge her reference to naturopath, traditional naturopath, ND or NMD from the internet for public view to the board.
I'll second that motion. And Ms. Anthony, I'll have you do roll call unless the board would like to go on further discussion over this. Okay. So Ms. Anthony, go ahead and do roll call.
Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay. We're going to move on to number 6, and that is review consideration and possible action regarding records in compliance with the consent agreement that was previously done. And that was at the 16-059, Dr. Orbit, where, you see on the phone?
Hello.
Are you there?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you copy, but I can hear you.
Okay, I have the phone in my hand now.
Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead, Ms. Lansing, can you go ahead and give us an overview of this?
Yes. Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, on January 17th, 2018, Dr. Warrick entered in a consent agreement for suspension, restriction, and probation relating to board case 16-059. Compliance with some orders, as outlined, number 4 and 5 of the order, Dr. Warrick completed the jurisprudence exam on January 9th of 2019, and the MPLEX pharmacology exam in August of 2018. Board staff ran a controlled substance prescription monitoring reports from 6/17/2017 through 3/27/2020 and confirmed no prescriptions for controlled substances had been written during that time frame. Practice monitor in place, Dr. Warrick has yet to provide the board with the name of an unbiased practice monitor for approval. Chart audit. On January 31st, 2020, board staff requested from Dr. Warrick a list of all patients seen within the last 12 months. On February 13th, 2020, the list was provided to board staff. On February 24th, 2020, board staff requested the records of 5 patients from dates of service 1/18/2018 forward. And on March 16th, 2020, records were received. The patient records are available in the chart for board review.
Dr. Warrick, I'll let you start and then I have questions. I guess, I don't know if he's still there.
Are you happy to read it, Steve?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I wanted to say, first of all, that I appreciate the constructive criticism that I've received from the board in the past and have done everything I can to implement the suggestions made. And specifically the concern that Anthony raised regarding the practice monitor, she has raised this question with me about more than 2 years ago now, I believe. And at that point, I had responded to her saying that my reading of the consent agreement was that as long as I did not prescribe any controlled substances, I did not need a practice monitor. And I had attempted but had been unable to secure a mutually acceptable practice monitor. And since then, I had not heard anything more from Ms. Anthony, and so I assumed that the situation was acceptable to her as well. And at this point, fairness and justice would suggest that latches be invoked, in that since it's taken this long to raise the issue again, that the issue is moot.
I took a moment to go back into June 8, 2017, and with me was Dr. Popiel and Ms. Tibbetts, myself, and the other board members are no longer on the board. And if I look at the page 38 of the consent agreement, it says in section number 2, within 60 days, respondent shall submit the name of a practice monitor for pre-approval by the board.
So, oh, I did.
Okay. And she, I guess, from what I'm understanding, is that wasn't acceptable.
Correct.
Did you follow back up with her at all as to you're having problems finding a practice monitor? And
I believe I did indicate to her, and most explicitly, I did communicate to her that it was my understanding that since I had attempted and had been unable, that the clause saying that in any time that I did not have a practice monitor, I did not prescribe controlled substances was an appropriate solution. And I never heard back from her after that, so I assumed that she had accepted that proposed solution.
when I look at this on page 38 of your consent agreement, the problem is it doesn't say that it's only if you use controlled substances.
Later on, there's a provision that says that in the event that I lose the practice monitor, I shall cease immediately to prescribe controlled substances. So perhaps there's a misunderstanding on my part in how these two clauses interact, and I apologize for that. But again, since I did raise that response to Ms. Anthony 2 years ago, approximately, and she took no action to follow up, and I assumed that my response was acceptable.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, ma'am.
You may.
This is Karen Tuttle. Was that question, Ms. Anthony? I'm not seeing in the documents that we have. Was that through an email, or was that a voicemail or a phone call? Was it a letter? Email. Do you have a copy of that, Ms. Anthony?
Ms. Tibbetts, are you referring to his request or his response to not having a practice monitor? Is that what you're asking?
Yes, I
believe that is in your packet. It's an email dated May 24th of 2018.
Okay. But isn't the practice monitor and the restriction of prescribing, aren't those two separate things? I didn't think that they were connected. I thought they were both requirements. Part of the consent agreement. That he would have a practice monitor and that he was no longer prescribing controlled substances. I thought they were two separate items. My recollection.
May I address that?
Well, I'd rather have our executive director and or Ms. Asta address that first.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you're, I'm just going to read it directly from the consent agreement on page 38 under practice monitor. It states, within 60 days of the effective date of this order, respondent shall submit the name of a practice monitor for pre-approval by board staff. Respondent is only permitted to prescribe controlled substances while the practice monitor is in place. If the practice monitor determines that he/she cannot continue, the practice monitor shall notify the board within 10 days of the end of the monitoring. If the monitor ceases to continue monitoring, respondent is immediately restricted from prescribing any controlled substances until another board-approved monitor is in place. The practice monitor qualifications. The monitor must be a licensed physician in good standing with the state Arizona Medical Board, Arizona Board of Osteopathic Medical Examiners, or the Arizona Naturopathic Physicians Medical Board. Board staff will provide the monitor with a copy of the consent agreement and order, the medical consultant's report and medical records in case number 16059 for review. The monitor shall submit a signed statement to the board indicating that he or she has read the documentation provided, B, fully understands the role of the practice monitor, and C, agrees to serve as the monitor respondent's monitor.
Would you continue on to the next page and read number 13, because that's pretty much...
Yes, thank you. So number 13, practice monitor reporting requirements. The monitor shall submit quarterly reports to the board that include an evaluation of whether respondent's conduct meets the standard of care in the following areas. A, prescribing controlled substances. B, maintaining adequate medical records. And C, performing physical examinations appropriate to the patient's complaints and symptoms to include laboratory or other diagnostic testing as appropriate.
So, Doctor, where are you confused?
My confusion was that it appears that the practice monitor was primarily or entirely assigned because of concern over my prescribing and documentation practices with regard to controlled substances, and that all of the verbiage that had been read was out of the board's concern over my prescribing practices regarding controlled substances. And I also indicated with Anthony that, according to the agreement, she also retained her own authority to examine my records, which I have provided to her at her request, and I suppose that will become a matter of discussion this afternoon as well.
Okay, let me defer this back to Ms. Asa in terms of her opinion on, and I hate to put you on the spot like that, Sarah, but I know you didn't draft this, but what's your opinion on this?
If you're asking me if you'd like to go into executive session, Dr. Patel, if you remember the committee, I'm happy to do so.
Okay. Yeah, so for clarification, on the consent agenda, on the consent agreement, I'm going to make a motion that we go into executive session.
I second that, Karen Tibbetts.
And Dr. Sadlick?
Please, legal advice?
Yes, thank you.
Yes, for legal advice. I'm sorry, Ms. Anna, are you going to say something?
I was going to say what Ms. Asma just said, yes, for legal advice.
Okay. And I guess we'll need a quick roll call on that.
Yes. Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
So
Dr. Werner, if you stay on the line, and we're all going to go to a different number, but we will be getting back to you, so please do not disconnect.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
And just to confirm, board members, do you all have the executive session number that I emailed to you earlier?
And
Ruben
does not.
Okay. Anybody else? Everybody else has the executive session?
Dr. Ruben, do you have your cell phone by you?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I can text you that number, and then we will meet you when you have a moment to dial that. In the interim, let's go ahead and we'll all meet up on the executive session number.
Yes, please.
We'll
do it back, please. Yes, please. Yes. Dr. Sadlick?
Here.
Dr. Popio?
Here.
Ms. Tibbetts? Ms. Tibbetts? Ms. Gallen?
Here.
Dr. Campbell?
Here.
Dr. Spatt?
Here.
Dr. Rubin?
Here.
Dr. Popio?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Asta?
I'm sorry.
Thank you. And Dr. Werwick, you're still with us, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. It was the intent of the agreement that the practice monitor, and I think it states that, was it's not only your prescriptions, but it's your charting, patient interactions, et cetera. And apparently there, you seem as though you had some confusion on that.
Evidently, there was not a meeting of the minds on that.
Okay. I'm opening up to the board members for discussion.
I think we're somewhat segmented and let's focus on this particular situation right now. I think let's just say, to my mind, what we've kind of discussed is 30 days to get a practice monitor in place, and we will review the case at that time. May I ask the board for assistance in finding an acceptable practice monitor, because it's really hard for me to find a stranger who's willing to read a stack of papers about 6 inches high in order to supervise a very, very small practice that I have.
Can we kick that back to the other doctor since it's a medical issue? We can't give you advice on who to use or who to find, but let me see what the other physician board members or public members think.
May I add one more thing?
Yes, sir.
Since the board has requested, excuse me, my current chart, you do have an opportunity to get some visibility into how I've been conducting myself. But let me emphasize that most of my activities under my naturopathic license could be fulfilled by a chiropractic assistant. I did not do anything at all this morning that a chiropractic assistant could not do except administer an acupuncture treatment, for example.
I don't think your chiropractic assistant can tell you how to prescribe thyroid, what appropriate labs are, et cetera.
I understand, but that's a very small part of my practice. And the total revenues from such prescribing are very small. And my main employment is under the supervision of a chiropractor who is also a naturopath, who I consult with regularly and mostly take dictation from. And he does have constructive criticism from time to time on how he wants me to chart my physics surveillance, which I do on a regular basis. This is Dr. Popio. I think in retrospect, looking back, if you had said in the practice monitor as requested a couple of years ago, we wouldn't be in a position right now where we're, but personally, when I'm looking at your chart, I'm wondering if you know the sections of SLAP, A particularly, because I don't see any actual diagnoses or assessment. You're essentially lumping in A and T together. So in my mind, if we have practice monitor in place as requested 2 years ago, we wouldn't have a separate issue that we're now going to have to deal with, which is the chart notes not being appropriate for standard medical chart notes. I don't have, maybe I missed them, but in most of the cases, the assessment is missing, and there is more of a plan typed into the assessment section. So I understand that you're not working as a physician for the most part, but the chart notes that we are looking at are medical chart notes that are not medical chart notes as they should be. Some of what you're looking at are incomplete notes that I have not yet done anything more than recommend tests prior to
chart notes that say SOAP and that you signed off on.
And you look at, for example, patient wants me to decide whether or not to prescribe parathyroid or endocrinopathy. The assessment should be hypothyroidism, Hashimoto's hyper or hypothyroid, subclinical hypothyroidism, fatigue, vitamin D deficiency. That is not an assessment. So had we had a practice monitor in place, you would be clear that this is not an appropriate chart note, and we wouldn't be back in this position asking somebody to monitor you because your chart notes are not appropriate. Yes, sir. That's what a practice monitor would have been able to help you with, is to put in place, hey, this guy can actually do chart notes now that some other physician could take and run with. So I guess that's my
possible. Is it possible to modify the requirements of a practice monitor to include somebody who is respected by the board, but who knows me and would like to teach me, as opposed to someone who is supposed to be somebody who's a total stranger and is there to crack the whip for the board, for want of a better description? But the board, I believe, earlier today, and looking at the board's general documentation, seems to want to work with doctors as peers and to encourage best practices as a peer. And so I feel that given my very low profile, I really ask for forbearance from the board to do something that's going to work for a person who has very little practice.
Let me echo what Dr. Popiel said. If you would have had the practice monitor in place, the basics of SOAP probably would have, I would assume, would have happened. I mean, there are some medications that you prescribe, such as naltrexone and thyroid, that it would behoove you, especially when you're doing your assessment and plan, to put why and then why you're in, what the assessment was on, and what your plan is, and what your follow-up actions would be within that plan. And that's where your assessment, that's where your practice monitor could have assisted you.
I understand what you're saying, and I really did try to find a practice monitor, but as I said, I was not able to locate anyone who would fulfill the requirements that the board set, especially the requirement of reading and the time the board that they understood 6 to 9 inches high stack of files.
This is Dr. Popiel. Gail, I do agree with that. I feel like it's kind of a tough time to start calling people and say, can you be my practice model? Do we have, is there any resources for that?
I'm sorry, it's hard to hear. So you're asking if we should help him with finding a practice monitor?
I'm just saying, when I look at the requirements, what he's stating, if the person has no business relationship, no personal relationship, no knowledge per se of you. So that means we're just cold calling. It's not like, I don't think there's a site you can find a practice monitor on. So my understanding is one would just be cold calling other physicians to say, hey, can you, I don't even know if they're compensated, can you compensate it or not, take a look at my chart notes and help monitor my practice. So
I do agree that that puts physicians in a tough position to just randomly call people that they actually have no relationship with and ask them for their guidance on monitoring the practice. So I'm just asking, is there any resources that would help with that? I do agree that that might be a challenge.
And so I don't have a list of people that would be, you know, available to him. You know, I'd like to caution the board that he did review this at the time. I believe he even had a counsel review this, and he did sign this the way it's written. So I don't think that we can go back and sort of tweak it. And then in terms of trying to find a practice monitor, I don't really think that's appropriate for the board to be doing. I think that's something that he needs to do. Understanding that, yes, it would be difficult for any physician to find a practice monitor, that's a difficult thing to do. But in this instance, you know, I don't know that it's appropriate for the board to interject names.
I wasn't saying per se on names specifically. I just didn't know if there were actually resources out there or not. So that's all I was asking.
Oh, I see.
How one would go about it,
okay.
Other than just cold calling other physician offices and saying, hey, can you help me out?
All right.
I have a question, Gail. Are practice monitors generally compensated, or is it something that they just agreed to do?
I think they're generally compensated unless the individual has some knowledge of somebody that would be willing to do it for him as a courtesy.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah.
I do remember the practice monitor being such a critical part when this consent agreement was put together, and it is so clear in Section 13 of what that practice monitor is supposed to be doing. And I think saying that I tried and haven't been able to, is, especially with 2 years having gone by, it just doesn't fly.
Dr. Burr, if there are individuals within the profession, and I can't get into that with you on the phone, that do and that might be through the AZNMA, you may want to, it's just a possible suggestion, it's not a resolution for you. That,
okay, that's a good term. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, the DO chart, the PEACH charting, you may want to contact those individuals, and that would be through, you know, Barron Gaslow's Association. Ask them if they're doing that, and if so, then it's what their fees are, et cetera, if there are any fees.
Okay, can I say a couple of things about what I think was what in advance of you said?
Mm-hmm.
I was scheduled to appear in December, and the meeting was canceled. And so I moved to Tennessee to be with my wife who's caring for her mother-in-law. And on very short notice, I was informed that my case had been rescheduled early in January, and it was not possible for me to return. So I was not present, and my lawyer did not show me the final draft. He just asked me to sign the consent agreement, and I signed it based on a draft, which I don't recall calling out all the details of the practice monitor. So I'm sorry about misunderstanding there, but I was, I think, poorly represented by my lawyer, who I think dropped the ball, but that's neither here nor there. I understand that you're very interested in me having some kind of supervision. I do believe that by mutual consent, the consent agreement can be modified at any time, and I would beg the board to consider lightening the requirements of the practice monitor in some way, especially not requiring them to read 7 inches worth of chart notes and the board's report as well. think that the board's objective can be achieved with a much lighter touch, shall we say. And again, since I am basically working for $25 an hour, and maybe see one metabolic patient a week, there's very, very little funds that I can generate from actually doing thyroid work. So I'm begging the board for some consideration of that.
And board members, if I may, I would like to ask Dr. Wehrig, you made mention earlier, Dr. Wehrig, that you are primarily doing chiropractic. Sounded like you wanted to sort of focus on that. I just wanted to ask you if you are aware that you would be able to voluntarily surrender your license if, in fact, that's what you choose to do.
That would not be helpful because I'm acting as a chiropractic assistant. I am not licensed as a chiropractic physician or assistant. And if I were to surrender my license, I would probably have a difficult time qualifying to be a chiropractic assistant. And I have $200,000 plus in student loan debt that somehow I would like to try to pay off. And so surrendering my license is not a viable option in my point of view, because sooner or later I hope that better times will come around. But it's probably being a naturopathic physician is not at all lucrative. At least I've never found it to be.
Okay, thank you.
Let me put this with the other board members and get their opinions. Dr. Rubin, let me go back to you on, was this going to stick to his part of the practice monitor at this point?
Oh, okay. You mean in terms of my comments?
Yeah. I mean, he states, and I understand, his the conundrum he's in terms of trying to locate somebody, even for physical reimbursement, to find someone who's willing to take that on.
I wonder if, this is Dan Urban, I wonder if somehow the practice that he's working with could somehow fund that, being the situation that he's in and how valuable he is. They may be able to pay, obviously they can't furnish the person, but that might be something to discuss.
At this point, the practice is struggling. The virus has definitely reduced our caseload significantly.
Dr. Spatt, what are your thoughts on it?
I don't have any comment. I just think it's a difficult decision to make, so give me some time to think about it.
Okay. And I understand what Dr. Profito is also saying, too, and as a physician, this would be a difficult predicament. The problem is, you signed the consent agreement, and the consent agreement, obviously, as we all agreed, is not just based on prescribing. So, and there are issues with your chart notes. Just if I may ask a question, the mental acuity testing, are you certified to do any of that?
That was part of my training at the Southwest College.
Okay, so they taught you how to do a mini mental state examination?
Yes, that's training test. They taught us specifically about that one and a couple others. I'm not sure. I know that I was taught mini mental state. I'm not sure what the others were. I obtained the resources over the internet. But really also say that I spent about a year working with a licensed social worker and doing biofeedback, neurofeedback, and he did a lot of those assessments, and I was He did not do them, but I observed him doing them and discussed with him some of the results. So it's not like I was naive about what I chose to do there.
Okay. But that kind of brings us back into your scope, and I can appreciate that, the ability to do that exam, but that brings you back into that practice.
My understanding of my practice is that it is as taught at a licensed naturopathic school.
And I concur with you that the problem is you're doing, you know, more than physical medicine, which is fine. However, with the consent agreement that you signed, it states the practice monitor. So we still get back to your doing, you have the ability, except you're limited in some areas, to do the scope of practice that is allowed by the state. So we get back again to the practice monitor.
Okay, I see that, but if your concern is my charting, then you may have other options. I believe that there is currently available more than one continuing education course specifically on charting that the board might consider as a more appropriate remedy for this particular concern.
So let me just digress for a second. Let's say when you signed this, that was drafted by another individual, you're saying that you weren't clear as to how difficult it would be to find a practice monitor, or that you didn't understand what the practice monitor's role was?
I was not clear as to what the exact wording was, because as I said, I was in Tennessee, my lawyer did the final negotiation and told me it's pretty much the same, we can't change anything or the board won't accept it, give me your signature please. And so I finally, without actually having read that verbiage, I only saw the signature sheet for the final draft. And I acted on my lawyer's assurance, which, in retrospect, was not clever for me to do. But I continued to look up spot because my lawyer was saying, accept any case.
Of the consent agreement?
Not to my attorney. I got the copy
of
the
consent. Well, I'm just asking now if you have a copy of it.
I didn't prepare it for
the state. You can sign something without having a tangible copy of the whole thing. That's a separate. I'm not talking about that, but you have a copy of it
I do not have it in front of me. But everything that you have said about it, right, as true to me, I would have to go to my archive to find that. I have the chart in front of me.
I remember the deliberation in person over a couple different board meetings, and the practice monitor was a very clear part of that, and I just want to state for the record that I feel that while we can acknowledge that there is confusion about the role of the practice manager and what all that entails, it is clear that the consent agreement included putting a practice monitor in place. Is there 30 days to do that, or if it's very difficult during this time to find someone, I'm willing to say 60 days. I don't know what the other board members feel, but I feel that practice monitor needs to be put in place so that your compliance, or the legal word for doing what was agreed to in the consent agreement. And then the charting and other things can be addressed separately, but I would like to make a motion that we give Dr. Weirich 60 days to get a practice monitor in place and
I guess I just want to get that taken care of. Like, have a, I don't know, I make a motion.
Yeah, I'm going to second that motion. I remember, you know, this case, and how much deliberation and time that the board and the members that were on the board put into trying to construct this for you and get this to work. If you had notified Ms. Anthony that you were running into a huge roadblock with this and then illustrated the problem you had on fulfilling it, you know, that may have helped. However, let me finish. However, you assume that it wasn't clear for you. It would have been much more constructive for you to have emailed her, picked up the phone, and tried to figure out where the issue was. And we're going two years ago now. That's the issue. So I'm going to make a second on Ms. Tippett's motion.
Is 60 days too long, Dr. Sadlick, or would you prefer the motion to be 30 days? I guess I should have had more information on that before I made that motion.
He brings up, and from a practice point of view, as a physician, I'm sure the rest of the members, physician members, would feel the same, and probably Ms. Gallen as an attorney. It's a big love to take the medical legal on and monitor another physician. So I think 60 days, you know, is fine. I have no problem in giving them 60 days to put something into place. I mean, I don't know how the other physician members feel, but or Ms. Dowler, but and that's the second of the motion, and I'd like to, before we take a quick roll call, get the other viewpoint.
I'm in favor of 60 days. I think with everything going on in the world right now, a little bit of extra time is reasonable, but I don't think there's any need to continue debating whether the practice monitor is needed or not. I think we need to fulfill the original intent of the consent agreement and put the practice monitor in place as outlined.
Okay, thank you, Dr.
Phil.
Dr. Rubin, as a doc, what's your thought? Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to say, I think that the board has done an excellent job on this. I commend everybody who's spoken. I know I've been silent on this, but I went through the charts. I do think that Dr. Weirich appears particularly skilled in the thyroid diagnostics was very interesting, and the calculations and the thoughts behind it, but I agree. You know me, I am a stickler for charting, and it is not the board's responsibility to alter things after consent agreement has been put in place and signed. And this, the motion I agree with because I think it protects everybody involved, including the respondent.
Dr. Spratt.
You know, I agree with everything that's been said, and agree with the motion that put in place at the moment. So 60 days will be appropriate at the moment.
And let me go through my list here. And Dr. Campbell, your thoughts?
I think Dr. Campbell, physician members. Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you now.
Hello,
and then, yeah, you mentioned you agree. Ms. Gallen, your thoughts?
Yeah, I
mean, I agree
with everything
about 60
days is probably more reasonable, but, you know,
normally I would probably say 30 days would be the best. So,
I'm
okay with it. I'm going to second Ms. Tippett's motion for 60 days. You're going to need to report back, or I'm sure Ms. Anthony will follow up on this practice monitor. And I mean, just as a sidebar, please take a charting course. I understand some of your logic, you know, it's there, but please take a course. So this one to anybody else that can pick that chart up, whether it be John, Mary, or Sue, and they can figure out
where you are and be able to pick up from there. So we're going to need basically a formal from Ms. Anthony.
And so, Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, if I can confirm or review what you said. So the actual motion is you're giving Dr. Warrick 60 days to get a practice monitor in place or to submit the name of a practice monitor.
I think Ms. Tibbetts, I don't know, I'll speak for her, was giving him 60 days.
To obtain a practice monitor.
Yes.
And the original order calls for staff approval. So are we still looking at him submitting the name for a pre-approval by board staff of the practice monitor, or is that something the board wants to approve?
That's a good question. Board members, do you want the executive director to approve it, or do you want the names coming back to us in 60 days?
I'm okay with the executive director.
I agree.
Okay.
I'm sorry, there were a couple of people talking at the same time, so what was the statement?
This is Karen Tibbetts. I'm okay with executive director
approval. Okay. Okay. So, Dr. Sadlick, would you like me to do roll call?
Yes, please.
Okay. Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Dr. Warren. Let's go ahead. We'll move on to item number 7, review consideration possible action regarding application for specialist certificate. So, Gail, can you give us a rundown on Dr. Lewis?
Yes, Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, this is an application for specialty certificate in women's health. In review of the application and the documents Dr. Lewis submitted, it appears that she meets the qualifications for specialty certificate, but the board needs to review and vote on that.
And this is a certifiable board. Recognized by the state of Arizona, obviously.
And Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, she did complete a 2-year general practice residency associated in women's health, and that residency was granted by CNME.
Okay. So I'll make a motion that we approve her designation for a specialist certificate. Any further discussion before we do roll call? Dr. Spatt, Dr. Rubin, anything?
Nothing from Dr. Rubin.
Okay. Nothing from Dr. Spatt. Okay, so then nothing from the public members. But I'll ask Ms. Anthony to do roll call then.
Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
that item number 8, review consideration possible action regarding application for renewal certificate to dispense. I think Dr. Rubin will accuse himself from both A and B.
This is Dr. Rubin. I recuse myself from C.
So I'll make a motion, if we can, okay, so we'll make them separate, that we make a motion for 8A, approval of Dr. Rubin's certificate to dispense.
Karen Simmons, I second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
And then we'll call it 8B. Dr. Smolinski, I'll make a motion. She's approved for certificate to dispense.
Is Dr. Popiel, I'll approve that. I'll give the second motion.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
And we'll move on to number 9, consent agenda, vote, review, consideration, possible action regarding the draft bid. Any questions we had from our last meeting, which was May 14th?
And if I may, Dr. Salek, members of the board, I'd like to remind Mr. Dr. Campbell that he was not present at the last meeting, so he would need to not participate in voting on this.
Thank you. I'll make a motion that we accept the draft minutes of May 14th.
Dr. Rubin, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries.
We'll move on to item number 10, which is the executive director's report.
And Dr. Salek, members of the board, I'd like to make a clarification, if I may, under the budget. I had put in the FY 20 ends July 1st, 2020, which is true. The expenses that I outlined will actually be reflected on the August ED report, not the July ED report, because it's going to take till the end of July in order to get all that sorted out. So were there any questions on the executive director report?
No, I have that. I'll make a motion that we approve the executive director's report, which would be as of today.
And Dr. Salek, members of the board, actually there's no action required on this.
Okay. Let's move to 11, future agenda items. Anybody have, any board members, have any future agenda items they'd like to address?
This is Dan. I wanted to bring something up, and Gail and the board, you can please let me know if this is entirely annoying and shut me down. I'm finding it burdensome for chart reviews to keep track of certain things, and I was wondering if I know the chronology is obviously important, so you can watch how things happen. I want to bring this up. There's a couple things to bring up. One, when we're reviewing a case that's kind of new to us, we're just looking through all the documents. I mean, sometimes there's 150 pages, and a lot of it's just websites. And when there's a case, we're going to help. Gail, is it easier for you and or the board? Is it better, you know, for you to look through it when there's a lab section and then there's a chart notes section, so you can kind of flip-flop between the two? You want to read all the chart notes, you want to read all the labs, and then there's the consent section, and then for me that would be a lot easier because I could go back and forth. And then, that's number one, and then number two, I wanted to maybe open a discussion about when we're calling our doctors back in or respondents back in because we want to do, we got them to read the MIC charts. What I was thinking is that sometimes it's hard to remember exactly what the points were, and if I haven't taken notes on that to review back, would it be a good idea in the future if we're asking for chart reviews to mention some very specific points that could then be brought back to us that we could then really act on them on, not just the overall quality of the chart, which we're doing, but if there's some things that we picked out and it might make it be a lot more smooth and a lot more efficient. And I just wanted to bring that up to the staff, I mean the board and the staff. And if it's not fair, I can restate. And if it's annoying, you can tell me that too. You know. I don't know if that's more, I don't know if it's more work or if it's more confusing. I don't know.
So are you saying, take, for example, a complaint in the review, are you saying that the soap notes in the patient encounters match up sequentially with the lab date?
No. I'm saying that, like, have a tab that's like, here's all the labs, have a tab, here's all the chart notes, here's the imaging. I want to go, you know, all the way through. Then for me, sometimes I don't know where the lab is, and now I'm on a chart note. And for me, it's also much easier to look at them in oldest to newest when I'm going through a note at the same time. Like, for me, I want to see what happened first, what happened second, what happened third. So I just think if we separate, then,
That already mentioned before. Item 11 is for future agenda items, not for discussion. So if you'd like to put some, you know, inform Gail to put something on the agenda for next time, that's probably a better idea.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood. Yeah, okay. So for next time, can we talk about that?
Yeah, let's do that. And I understand what you're saying. You know, that. Is that clear what he's asking?
Yes.
Okay. We could, you know, take a look at that. I guess that'd be August in terms of trying to get that taken care of. That'd be future agenda items, which was number 11. And then call to public. I take it we don't have any public members there. So I will. At this point, we're on number 13, 3:04 p.m. Unless there's other comments, we can adjourn. Nothing?
I move to nothing.
Dr. Rubin.
Dr. Rubin moves to adjourn.
Okay. All right. So it's 3:04 p.m. and we're adjourned. Thanks, everyone, for your feedback.
Thank you, everyone. And stay well.
Yeah, keep well, everyone. Thanks.
Okay. I give you a question to the 3 minutes.